Hi, everybody. My name is Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Ed and the committee for inviting me to come up here and participate in this meeting tonight. Happy birthday, or congratulations, everybody who celebrated various lengths of sobriety. I usually refer to those people by name, but not tonight. I'm real happy to be here. I don't usually go out of Southern California to talk because I have a problem with flying. And just to give you an idea, the flight over today, there was a guy sitting across the aisle who'd never been on a plane before. And you know when your car is out of alignment and it starts to shake? But you know you can pull over to the shoulder. It was much worse than that. And the only thing I can say is the wonderful thing about a plane is that you know you're not going to end up maimed. That's looking at the bright side. This kid across from me was really shaken up. Not that I noticed it, I heard later. I was doing my own little thing over my side of the plane. You know, I've often wondered if I'm on a plane and I knew it was going to go down, because that is a moment of truth. I've often wondered, am I the kind of a guy who, if I knew we were going to go down, would I rush to the galley for those little bottles? I don't know. Usually when I give a talk, I go about my day. I have my life that day, you know, and I go to a meeting, and I see people I know, and I talk to them, and then the momentum of that carries me into my talk, and that's not the case today. The case today is that I got up early this morning. I went to the airport. I didn't talk to anybody this morning. I didn't know anybody on the plane. I got here, and a lady, nice lady named Sharon, picked me up at the airport and then dumped me at the hotel. She dropped me off at the hotel, and then I proceeded to go to my room and think about things for the next 4 hours. At the end of the 4 hours, when somebody came by to pick me up, I thought, why am I giving a talk when I feel like hanging myself at this point? Because in spite of the fact that I have been sober for a few years, I still make major mistakes. About a week ago, I was, it was a Saturday, and I had about 2 hours with nothing to do, you know, and that's really bad for me when I have nothing structured to do in my life. And what I thought I'd do is it made sense that I should sit in the reclining chair in the middle of the afternoon with the shades drawn and just take stock of my life. Now, if you're new, I advise that you don't do this. It's not a good idea to take stock of your life at any time. You know, certainly when I wake up in the middle of the night at 2 o'clock, I advise anybody who's new, if you wake up in the middle of the night, don't lie in the darkness and think about your life. Because I guarantee you it isn't going to turn out well. Get up, have a sandwich, watch TV. If you have to, call somebody. But don't lie in the darkness and think about your life. And what I did last Saturday is I sat in this reclining chair and I took stock in the middle of the afternoon in dim lighting. And I was listening to the radio, and at one point, The Way We Were came on. Now, it wasn't the Barbara Streisand version. It was the Gladys Knight and the Pips version. And there's a line, there's a lyric in that song, which is, memories are beautiful, and yet what's too painful to remember, we simply choose to forget. What's too painful to remember, we simply choose to forget. Sure. Now, that may be what Gladys Knight and the Pips do, but I'm the kind of guy, when it comes to what's too painful to remember, I replay over and over and over and over again. And aside from the fact that I drank for 17 years, I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was very fortunate in that the program took for me right away. You know, I haven't had to fight a drink, what we call fight a drink. I haven't had to think about wanting a drink. Certainly, I've intellectualized about a drink, and I've thought, I wonder what that would be like, but I haven't felt like taking a drink. And that's very fortunate for me. I don't take credit for my sobriety. You know, I tried to quit many, many times on my own, and I never made it. And I don't know why this time it took. But that tells me there's some sort of higher power, something greater than me anyway, and I feel very fortunate. Now, a lot of people told me that the reason that the way to stay sober was to take a lot of commitments and to do a lot of actions in AA. And I did those things. I came in, and I stacked chairs, and I talked to newcomers, and I gave people rides. And I don't know that that's what kept me sober, because I knew of many others who did those same kinds of things with much more enthusiasm than me, and much more frequency than me, and they ain't here today. But I choose to believe that those actions that I took served me well, and so I continue to take them today, because I'm the kind of a guy that when things are really bad, I'll do anything. And then I start to get good, and I start to accumulate things in my life, and I start to feel good, and then I'm the kind of guy who wants to clutch those things and not have anybody take them away from me. Let somebody else go pick up a newcomer. And what I've learned here is that I've got to continue to do the things that I did when I came in here feeling bad. Now, there have been a lot of laughs here tonight, and everybody seemed pretty happy, you know, before the meeting and everything, but I'm sure that there are a few people in this room, maybe there are many people in this room, but certainly a few, who are sitting on some major pain tonight, that are hurting, emotional hurt. And I'm here to tell you that I know what that feels like. Because that's how I felt when I came to AA. I know what that feels like. I know that it's physical. I know that emotional pain can manifest itself physically for me. You know, my throat hurts. My chest hurts. I came in here off of a divorce. And it hurt physically right in here. And I don't have anything over anybody who's new. Except one thing. I went through the pain that I thought was going to kill me without taking a drink for the very first time in my life. And I don't know why, but I did. I thought it was going to kill me, and I somehow got through the pain without any chemical help. And what I have over a newcomer is that I went through that experience and came out the other side. And was able to turn back and see that I had gotten through the pain without taking a drink. And that registered up here for the very first time. And I can tell you that since then I've gone through periods of pain just as intense. And I've gotten through those periods without taking a drink. And those experiences have registered up here, along with the experiences of the people that I've sponsored that thought they were going to die from their pain. And they somehow got through it. And I come to these meetings and I hear people talk about how they got through their pain. And that's why I keep coming back here, because now I have all of that registered in my head, and it gives me this, which maybe a newcomer doesn't have. When the pain comes up for me these days, as much as it hurts and as intense as it still is, I know it's going to be okay. I know it's going to be okay, and I only know that because I've been through it without chemical help a lot of times, and I've seen other people get through it. And maybe one of these days that pain is going to come that I'm not able to get through. You know, maybe I don't think it's going to be okay that time. And that's why I have a sponsor. And that's why I come to these meetings. That's why the fellowship in AA means a lot to me, because then I can go to people. You know, when I first got to AA, I thought people would come to me, smiles on their faces like a herd of Bambis racing at me. And that turned me off. I didn't understand this stuff about, well, we just want to love you back to sobriety. What are you talking about, love? You don't know who I am. What are you talking about, love, you know? And I didn't want to start getting friendly with any of these people in AA, because my picture of what was going to happen was that they were going to start to invade my home. They were going to keep expecting things from me and wanting things from me and turning up and calling me and all of that. And they would give me their cards and their phone numbers and say, Jack, call anytime. If you feel bad, if you feel like taking a drink, call anytime, night or day. And I remember when I first got here, I thought, well, where were these people when I drank? I loved calling anytime, night or day then. But I hated the idea when I got here, and I hated it so much that on some occasions I would take a couple of cards that somebody gave me, and I'd go to another meeting and give those cards to other newcomers. And I would say to those newcomers, look, I work the swing shift. Best time to call me is after midnight, okay? Let me tell you what I've come to find out in Alcoholics Anonymous. People don't invade my life. There are people that I have come to love in Alcoholics Anonymous that I truly call my friends because of one night. Because one night when it hurt so bad, somebody sat up with me and got me through it. And I may not have talked to that guy for another 5 years. And yet when I see those people, I have an experience of love for those people, because they saved me. And it was just one night, because that's all it is. That's all. The people that I know that have gone out to drink, when they reflect on it, if they're lucky enough to come back, usually at the root of it someplace is a moment that was so intensely painful that they couldn't get past it. Like suicide. Like the moments that lead people to suicide sometimes. And I have people in AA who can get me through that moment. And you can bet I call them anytime, day or night today, because I've learned to do that if it comes to that. And so my problem today is not taking a drink. You know, my problem is what it's been for many, many, many years, and that is the emotions that I feel. And my emotions haven't changed since I got sober. And saying, I have my emotions just as quickly and as intensely as I ever have. The only difference is that being around here has taught me that I don't have to act on my emotions. And that was always my downfall. Anytime I act on my emotions, whether those emotions be anger or love at first sight, I've always regretted the actions that I took based on my emotions. And today I have a moment in there where when the emotion flares up, I'm able to reason for a moment and know that if I take an action based on how I feel, it isn't going to benefit me. And believe me, I'm talking percentages here, you know. Sometimes I still take a destructive action based on how I feel. But the number of times I do that is way down. And I have a couple of cats at home. So I've always been a controlling kind of guy, you know. And when I drank all those years, I didn't really like to go to bars because it's so hard to control a bar. So I was the kind of guy who had this, who sat at home a lot and got drunk and went into my head and thought about how things ought to be. With me at the head of them, of course. And I tried to control the people in my life, and I have a tendency to try that now. And for a long period of my drinking, I went from single apartment to single apartment. I had these two cats, one of which I still have. And I tried to control them. You know, when I used to drink, that which was truly important, I considered trivial. Education, work, relationships with people I love, that was all trivial stuff. The true trivial stuff was what I attached vital importance to. And I guess that's how I was able to one time get in an argument with my girlfriend's four-year-old for an hour and a half. And when you're losing at life, you have a tendency, I had a tendency to make a big thing out of, for instance, trying to control my cats. Because let's face it, it's a vital issue when they throw up on the carpet instead of the linoleum. And I might find myself yelling at my cat, trying to make her understand why she did wrong when she was just being a cat. And I remember I got this brilliant idea one time on how to control these animals. Went out and got myself a squirt gun. Just give you an idea of how exciting my life was. You know, I was really looking forward to that night, you know. When I got the squirt gun, I went home. I had my alcoholic kit with me, of course. Endless cigarettes, you know, the booze, the Hostess, and the Sara Lee and the refrigerator, because I smoked a few joints, too, and the TV guide, and maybe a list of out-of-state area codes that I would need. Now, I remember how important it was to me at one point to think about going to work, because I thought, then I could afford a remote control, and I wouldn't have to get up out of that chair at all. And yet I'm the kind of guy who goes around feeling sorry for people in wheelchairs. And yet for all those years that I drank, I can tell you that people in wheelchairs had more of a life than I did. Because my paralysis was self-inflicted. And I chose to sit in that chair day after day, month after month, year after year. And on this one particular night, I had my squirt gun, and I sat there and I looked at those two cats. And I thought, okay, try something. And wouldn't you know it, they didn't do one thing all night. They were never out of line once. They just sat there in those sphinx-like positions. God only knows what they were thinking about me. They did absolutely nothing. But, being the kind of guy that I am, I drilled them anyway. Those cats have taught me a lot. I'll tell you something about my cat. You know, I'm supposed to be superior to my cat. See, my cat is absolutely not afraid of anything. until there is something to be afraid of. She's not afraid of anything until there's something to be afraid of. If I go up to her when she's sitting on the carpet and I go, hey, 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 like that, she'll panic, run and hide because there's something to be afraid of. But I guarantee you my cat does not sit on the carpet and think, I have a feeling that that... but I'm superior, aren't I? See, that's the difference between my cat and me. I get into something that we call projection. Now, some of you may not know what I mean by projection. It's a term that's used in these AA meetings, certainly around Southern California. And projection causes me most of the anxiety and frustration that I feel in my life today. Now, for those of you who don't know what it is, I've been using an illustration for many years. So what projection is, and I'll tell it to you. This happened a few years ago. I was talking to a female friend on the phone. Now, we hadn't spoken for a while. We were catching up, and she happened to mention during the course of the conversation that she had a guest, a woman, that was visiting her from South America, from the country of Paraguay. Woman was visiting. And then we talked about some other things, and my friend said, Jack, and I haven't seen you for a while. If you're not doing anything, would you like to drop by? And I wasn't doing anything, so I dropped by to visit my friend. My friend, being a rather normal lady, felt it appropriate that since she had this visitor, this lady from Paraguay, staying with her for the weekend, that it would be appropriate to introduce me to the lady from Paraguay. And I remember when I put out my hand to meet this woman, I thought, I don't want to live in Paraguay. Newcomers, that's projection. You didn't know. And this is something that I am very, very adept at. You know, I have done this kind of thing that causes me... See, I haven't had a lot of terrible things happen to me since I've been sober, but I've had a lot of anxiety. And before I got here, I thought it was because of what I call the anti-Jack Squad. They're everywhere. And after I got here, I found out that the anti-Jack Squad is me. That there is no anti-Jack Squad, that I'm the anti-Jack Squad. And for some reason, I have to stir things up for myself. There's something about drama that's very important to me. Very important. On any level, I have a vacuum cleaner at home. It's got two speeds. I've often thought, who would use the slow speed? Not any alcoholic I know. I'll be working that machine and in the living room sometimes, and oh, let's say there's a kernel of popcorn up against the baseboard, maybe a trash can about 3 feet away from it. All right, look, I'm not the kind of a guy who's going to go over and pick up the kernel of popcorn and toss in the trash can, because there's no drama in that. I toss it in the middle of the room so I can suck it up with that machine. And so somehow or another, I always generate my own anxiety. And I've done it in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sitting in a meeting before, maybe, well, I had a pack of gum and there's two sticks left in it. I pop one of the sticks in my mouth, and then I suddenly get the feeling that there's a little coveting coming from this guy to my right. I don't want to be a nice guy, so I take that last piece out and I offer it to the guy, gum. He says, well, yeah, thank you. And I think, yeah, take my last piece, why don't you? But see, I'm so good at this that I have been in that very same situation. A couple of sticks of gum, pop one in my mouth, coveting from over here, gum, guy says no thanks, and I think my gum's not good enough for you. That just doesn't matter. I've done this kind of thing in my sleep. Remember when I was married, I was drinking at the time. I had a dream one night that my wife was making it with somebody else. Let me tell you, I woke up with an attitude. I swaggered into the room where she was, with that look on my face that I used to get when I was displeased. And she looked over at me and said, Jack, what is it? What's wrong? I just said, yeah, right. Then I went ahead and explained what the dream was. Described it in detail. And my wife wasn't an alcoholic, rather normal. As I was describing this with the kind of intensity on my face, her jaw was dropping slowly. When I was finished with my description, she said, as any normal person would, I imagine, Jack, don't you see it was only a dream? And I said, yeah, I know it was only a dream. Now why don't you tell me why I dreamt it? Commander-in-chief of the anti-Jack squad. I never know how I'm going to feel on a given morning, you know. I can have 40 good days in a row, and then I can have maybe 41 and 42 and 43, or I can have 20 bad days in a row and think I've got a good day coming and it might be another bad day, or I might just be as happy as a lark and then suddenly something changes me. And I never know what, and that's why I always have to keep this thing a one day at a time type thing. You know, back in L.A., they have, and I know they're this way here too, they have those, you know, walk signs where you cross the street. I remember how good I was feeling back in August, and it was very, very hot in Los Angeles, very hot. And I was going to cross the street, but I felt good. And there's a metal button that you push that theoretically makes the sign change. And of course, I'm the kind of guy who presses it many, many times to get it to change quicker. And I think, I don't know if, I, can't imagine that that metal button really is connected to anything. You know, it's just... Are there really any wires behind that thing? I mean, it just seems like a metal thing that... But I pressed it on this one particular occasion on this hot day, feeling very good. And somebody had put their gum on it. And I became annoyed. And I thought, who would do that? I mean, why would somebody do this? That is such a hostile act. There's something so hostile about somebody doing this. I'd like to shoot the bastard who did that. I really would. Now, when I came in here, when I came into AA, I couldn't figure out why people, my contemporaries, people my age out there were doing so much better than me professionally and personally. Were doing so much better than me professionally and personally. And it occurred to me after I'd been here for a few years that whenever anything bad happened in their life, whenever anything good happened in their life, they just had to live with it. And I didn't. I took a drink. And that drink was magic for me. And it made whatever my problem or my anxiety, or even my happiness on some occasions. Because happiness was very uncomfortable for me, and it is sometimes today. It's very uncomfortable for me when things are going well because I'm not used to it. And those people learned every time something happened to them how to live with it. And I didn't, because I took a drink. And why shouldn't I? Why should I do something that is going to help me or expand me or make me learn anything when all I had to do was take this magic drink and I didn't have a problem anymore? And so I could drink away any anxiety that I had year after year after year. And so these people were doing something called growing up. I guess while I was throwing up. And they were setting, you know, some of these people set goals. They knew they had direction in their life. Their straight line may have wavered, but they were moving towards something. These are the kind of people who understand that if you want a job, you can start at the bottom and work your way up. And I never understood that. And they set goals, maybe, and I didn't. And my life was just a circle for 17 years, and the circle was that I drank, and then I got drunk, and then I woke up in the morning, and I felt remorse. I felt guilt and remorse when I woke up in the morning, when I remembered what I had done. And then I might say something to a God that I certainly didn't believe in, but for some reason in moments of trouble, I would address this thing that I didn't believe in and say, you know, please help me to quit doing this. And by 4 or 5 in the afternoon, I was able to rationalize taking a drink and getting drunk and waking up with remorse and rationalizing and getting drunk again. And in that manner, I ate up my late teens and all of my 20s. Because I thought I was going to get another chance at life. I must have thought that. I must have thought that this really wasn't my life. That my new life was going to start. But this wasn't it yet. That it was okay to use up 17 years. And when I got to AA, a day at a time, that concept was not new to me. Because I guarantee you I never figured I was going to drink for 17 years. I did it a day at a time, And I always believed that this day was going to be the day that I stopped. And I strung together 17 years, just like I've strung years together sober. And today I have a sponsor. And if you're new, I suggest that you get a sponsor. I will only tell you a couple of things that I look for in my sponsor that I think are important. And one of those things is that I need somebody in my life that I can tell the truth to, that I can feel comfortable enough to tell the truth to, no matter how ugly the truth is. Because if I hang on to my ugly truth, it eats me up, is what it does. And so my sponsor has more time than I do. But I don't necessarily want what my sponsor has in his life, and he has many good things in his life. The reason that I chose my particular sponsor is because he knows how to head my mind off at the pass. He knows how to wave a flag in front of me, and a lot of times I don't pay any attention to that flag. But at least I have a shot. Because I am inclined, for some strange reason, to be destructive. You know, we say to people, you know, don't go out and have a drink. That's not going to make you feel any better. Well, I think we know that. God forbid if I ever took a drink, I'm sure it would be because I wanted to make myself feel worse. Because that's how I am. When life ain't going the way I want to ruin it. I want to ruin what little there is. It's either got to work perfectly or it's no good. And I am inclined to be destructive for whatever reason. And I got to watch that. I got to watch it. I have to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous constantly that I don't feel like doing. You know, for the last 10 years, I get up 5 days a week, somewhere between 5 and 6 a.m. I go out and I run several miles, and then I go to a gym. And I can tell you that I have never once felt like doing that. Not once. Every single morning that I wake up, my first thought is, I don't want to do this. And before I got to AA, my way of coping with my anxieties and my problems when I woke up with them in the morning, because they sneak up on you, they sneak up on you at night. I woke up with that stuff. I woke up with that pain in my chest a lot of times. And the way that I coped with it is I pulled the covers over my head. That's how I dealt with it. And that is not how I deal with it today. I pull the covers in the opposite direction. Because I know when I wake up in the morning, whether I feel like doing that stuff or not, has absolutely nothing to do with getting it done. So I wake up and I think, I don't want to do this, and I throw the covers back, and I get up and I throw water in my face and I go do this. And when I'm out there doing it, I feel better. And on those rare occasions when I don't do this, see, I've learned something. If somebody wants me to do something that's going to take me 25 minutes that I absolutely don't want to do, I have come to learn that if I don't do it, I'm going to spend about 4 or 5 hours, if not days, feeling guilty about it. And so what I've learned to do is to do the task, whatever it is, because I know how long it's going to take and when it's done. My sponsor told me years ago that freedom was not getting out of responsibility, but it was the feeling you get when you have completed your responsibility. And I have come to learn that. Because when I do what I said I was going to do, what I do when I'm, what I'm supposed to do, I feel good after. And I feel good when I go run every morning. And I don't go to my AA meetings based on how I feel. Because I'm the kind of a guy that if I get up and leave a meeting in the middle, see, I don't leave, I was taught not to leave a meeting in the middle. I leave a meeting when I know before I get to that meeting that I'm going to be go someplace during that meeting, and I can leave under those circumstances. But I don't leave because I feel bad when I do that. And I'm the kind of a guy that if I leave a meeting early once, it makes it easier for me to leave it again and again. It's just like one cigarette or one peanut with me, you know? And I've got to watch that. So I sit in a meeting no matter how dreary it is because I know it's going to be over at a certain time, and I'm gonna feel good about how I behaved. See, I can't wait until I feel like doing something. That's how I used to live my life. I used to live my life waiting until I felt like doing something before I did it. Guess how much I got done. See, I just happen to be the kind of guy who never feels like doing anything. Some very nice people who brought me to the meeting the night asked me if I'd seen the sites here in Sacramento, the Capitol building, etc. And I've never been to Sacramento. I assured them that I had. It was very exciting to go through the pamphlet in my hotel room looking at the pictures. Because left to my own devices, I like to isolate. I don't know why that is. I have to get moving. I have to concentrate my energy away from me. When we talk about serenity around here, I used to think, before I got here, that serenity was, sitting under a tree next to a babbling brook, butterflies fluttering, birds chirping, breeze blowing. Just kind of sit under the tree, and I'd park my car down at the road and come up, find a nice tree somewhere. That was what serenity was supposed to be. No, because the minute I sit under a tree for about 2 minutes, I start questioning where she is. Is she really out with her girlfriends? I'm convinced that somebody's ripping off my car at the end of that babbling brook. In order for me to feel serene, I have to concentrate my energy and my focus away from Jack. Pick up ashtrays, watch a good movie, talk to a newcomer, whatever it is. But I gotta focus it away from me. I gotta get these eyeballs focused out, not in. Because when I do that, I always end up feeling bad, and I don't know why. So if you're new tonight, I'm here to tell you that I know what that pain is like. But it's going to be okay. It really is going to be all right. It doesn't feel that way, I know. But don't pay attention to what it feels like. Because I guarantee if you act on how you feel, it's going to feel worse down the line. If you're anything like me, it's going to be okay. You know, and I know that there's probably a lot of relationship trouble in this room. You will learn things about relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was with a woman a couple of years ago for a number of years who left me 6 times. She left me 6 times. And I went around thinking, how could she do this? How could she leave me six times? How could this woman leave me six times? Then one day it came to me. It's because I took her back five times. And I guarantee you that's the only way it can happen. So you will learn plenty around here. I have one of these medallions that they give at some meetings, and I was in Texas a couple of years ago. I was living there for about 5 months, and I celebrated my birthday there, and I got one of these medallions. And if you've seen these before, if you have these, you know this is not a precious metal. And you know, sometimes when I empty my pockets at night and I throw the stuff onto the dresser, like the money and the wallet and the keys and this medallion, I think, you know, what if somebody broke in here and was only going to take what was valuable? If they knew anything at all about precious metal, they wouldn't take this. They wouldn't take this. And they would be dead wrong as to what is valuable, because this is the most valuable thing in my life. What this represents is the most valuable thing in my life. It's very clear to me that without my sobriety, nothing in my life could possibly work as well as it does. It may be bad, but it would be worse if I wasn't sober. I know that. And I can't guarantee if you're new and you stay here, you're going to stay sober. And I cannot guarantee that I am going to stay sober. But I can guarantee that if I ever get drunk, God forbid, and I'm sitting in a bar, I will remember that the sober life that I had in Alcoholics Anonymous was the best life that I ever had. And when you're new, and it's just hard to buy it all. You almost have to have a little bit of faith. Some faith. You can't listen to your head. It's like you're standing at an AA cliff. And it's a long way down. It looks a long way down, and you gotta jump. You gotta jump. And if you reason it out, it's not gonna make sense. You have to have a little bit of faith. You have to keep coming back here. You have to take that jump, and you'll go up, not down. Thank you for having me.